Take your Bibles, please, and turn to Ephesians. We are in chapter 6, the last chapter of the book of Ephesians. And we are going to be talking today about the rest of the individuals in the household. The rest of the house, we talked last hour about the husbands and the wives. And today, we get to talk to the children. So this is a children's message. Just what you want to hear. Message for the children. But I can promise you, if you follow this, your life will be richer and better and far more than you can ever anticipate. Most of the time when I talk to you about stuff, I have to say, well, I think this might be a good idea. But I have scriptural authority to tell you that if you follow what I'm going to say in the next few minutes, your life will be much richer. Wouldn't you like to have a life when you look back, you say, oh man, that was a wonderful, lovely, long life? Well, listen carefully. So we're in Ephesians chapter 6, and I'd like to do all the way through verse 9 today. Children, obey. Has the idea of hearing and understanding. I have a dog. He cannot obey. Do you know why he can't obey? Because he's deaf as a post. He can't hear a thing. Now I can tell him to do something and he doesn't do it. How many of you children can hear what I'm saying? Aha! This is applying to you. If you can hear, then you have everything you need to do. It means to hear and understand. It's when there's a knock at the door. What happens when the doorbell rings? Well, unless if it's Wednesday night and the church is over there, everybody stops what they're doing and they listen. That's where this term comes from, to be listening, standing at the door after there's a knock on the door. What was that? Did you hear that? So children, obey your parents. This is not the same term as we found in chapter 5. This is not hupotasso. This means to hear and to hear with a sense of being under the voice. Hear under the voice. So when your parents say, listen to me, they expect you to stop and look at them. And they want you to pay attention to them because you're listening and you are under the authority, under the power of their voice. And if you have a well-trained dog, then they will do the same thing. If you have a dog that has more energy than sense, good luck. We had a beagle. I'm sure glad that beagle wasn't my child because I could never train it to obey me. It wouldn't listen to me. I finally gave up on having screen doors. I had a screen door, you know, a sliding door with a screen door, and I liked it. I had to give up on it. I put French doors in because I could not keep the beagle from going through the screen. Didn't matter what I did. He was going to go through that. Because she followed her nose, wherever her nose went, and you could holler at her, Lucy, come! She is not hearing under the authority of my voice. However, the little dog that we had, when he could hear, now he really obeyed. And we've taught him to listen. Now we have to give him hand signals. Except my leg's getting sore. Because this means come. The reason he's having trouble coming now is not only is he deaf, guess what else? It's a good thing his nose works. Otherwise he'd be lost for sure. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is just. This is righteous. This is a really good thing. This is exactly what should be done. When you think about righteousness or things that are just, boy, that's wonderful. That's good. Like when you have a really good meal last night. I was going to go get some leftover barbecue, and it was all eaten. I'd already gone to that cupboard too many times, that bag in the freezer, so it was empty. But I found a couple of leftover hamburgers, and so I chopped them up and I threw them in a pan, and I took an onion and cooked it in the microwave with garlic and butter, and then took some squash and chopped it all up and threw it in all one big pan and added some flavoring, salt and pepper and some seasoning. Oh man, that tasted so good. That's righteous. That's just. Man, that's just awesome. When children obey their parents, it's the right thing to do. Paul can't conceive of a time when it's the wrong thing to do. Your parents are truly on your team. There is no one in your life ever that will be as completely and totally unreservedly on your team as your parents. They will tell you not what you want to hear, but what they think you should hear. You may not like it, but they are on your team. Both of my parents are dead. My mother died young, my dad died old. And I lost their support, their unbiased, unvarnished opinion. So for instance, I will tell you a story. I wanted, and Sarah wanted, to buy a sailboat, a little Sunfish. We were living down in Dallas, and we had extra money, no kids, apartment, working carpentry work. Sarah was working at Baylor. And so we had some extra money, and we had a place where we could park this little trailer and a boat, the apartment we were renting. And White Rock Lake was just down. And so we wanted to buy a sailboat. And I made the mistake, mind you, I'm an adult. I made the mistake of telling my mother that we were going to go look at a sailboat, because one of the teachers actually worked in the book room. He was selling a Sunfish, a little sailboat. And as soon as she heard it, you know the first words out of her mouth? Oh, you don't need a sailboat. You need to buy a washer and dryer. Guess what we didn't get? Sailboat. Yeah. She was absolutely right. Nobody else would have told me that. I should tell you the story about when we took it out for the first time. Turned out my mother was really, really right, because I didn't actually believe her. And we took it out for a drive on the lake, and Sarah, I remember her still flying by me. she went into White Rock Lake. I thought she'd hang on when the boat turned over, but she didn't. It was like a catapult. There she went. So children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Your parents are on your team unreservedly. You may not like what they have to say, but what they're saying, you need to listen to. So children are those who are underage. That means if your parents were to die, we would have to find someplace else for you to live. You're not independent. That means college kids, where's the money coming from? It's coming from your parents. You better be real careful. I remember having a student, I was teaching business math at the time, and he was so, so mad at his father. Single mother, boy situation. And this boy, he was so angry at his father. And one of the things I tried to do during the year was convince him of the stupidity of that. I don't know if I succeeded or not, but his mother had absolutely no money, and his father did. And this kid was smart and he wanted to go to college. But he was too stupid to understand that the money would come from his father, but the minute he turned 18, that spigot closes, unless if it's goodwill. Too stupid to see it. Smart kid, but he didn't get this. I think I actually persuaded him. I lost track of him after he graduated. Honor your father. Singular here. This is children, plural, but you specifically. You, honor your father, an imperative. Why does he change from obey, general, to you specifically? Because you have a particular father. Parents, children, there's the general statement. Listen to them. Hear the voice under their authority. But you have your father. And he's afflicting you as he sees fit. According to Hebrews, we have earthly fathers, and they do what they think is right while we're under their care. So obey or honor your father and mother. You have a particular mother. You have a particular father. I know when you hit certain ages, you wish that you had somebody else's parents. I remember thinking, oh man, I wish I had my cousin's mom and dad, because they let him do everything. They let him get away with all kinds of stuff. And I kept thinking, man, if I did that, I would be in so much trouble. Guess what? My parents were right. How do you know? Well, you have to see the end of the story. So though you may wish that you had a different set of parents, they drug you here so that you could hear this message. That's important. They truly do want you to hear and understand God's word, because it is the only thing that'll truly deliver you in life as you go forward. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise. That means in the Ten Commandments, this is the first one that has something attached to it that's beneficial in a direct and promising sense. Turn over to Exodus chapter 20. This is where you would find the Ten Commandments. It's actually called the Ten Words. 10 words in Hebrew. All of the words are preceded with a negative. So it's no, and then the command. And so every child, every Jewish child, grows up learning the Ten Commandments. So verse 3, no, and then the term would be other gods. That's your first commandment. The second commandment would be no idols. Verse 4. The next one, I missed it. No swearing. I can't see it in my text. The fourth one, remember the Sabbath. There's your interpretive nuance, which is positive. So you have three negatives, and I can't believe I can't see it. And I should have underlined this. No other gods, no idols. Verse 7. No swearing. No, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. Verse 7. And then this would be the first half, Exodus 20, verse 7. Verse 8 is remember the Sabbath, which is positive. So no, 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 and a positive. Now, the first commandment with promise is actually on the second half of the tables of stone. Honor your father and mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving to you. And then no murder, no adultery, that protects marriage, no stealing, that protects property, no false witness, that's criminal issues, no crime, and then don't covet. Coveting being the interpretive nuance for the second half. So when Paul, I'm back to Ephesians 6. When Paul comes in here and he says, honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with promise, and then he quotes it in order that it may go, or it may become, that you might be in a state of wellness and a goodness, that it may go well with you. If you want a life where things seem to work out well, then you honor your father and mother. And that you will be long lived on this earth. Now, teenagers, they don't understand long life. They think they're immortal. They think they're never going to die. And the first time somebody dies, it's usually a grandparent. And the grandparents seem as old as the earth is created. And so, well, what else would they do? They're old. So children's view of age is really, really odd. I was talking to Charlene yesterday, and her grandson, Jonah, he's 4, and he's just understanding now about age. So he thinks my sister is just as old as ever could be. He says, "Grandma, how old are you?" And she says, "I'm old enough to drive Papa's truck." Oh, wow. And he thinks for a little bit and he says, "Are you 6? So, you know, the concept of age for young people, they don't, why would I want to live long? I don't want to live long. I want to have fun. Well, you'll sing a different song as you get a little bit older. But it's not just living a lot of years. It's living a lot of years where things go well. You do not want to have a life that's like a car going down the road, crashing into the guardrails on either side. Your parents say, don't do that. Well, don't do it. You're going to be far better off if you listen to them. Well, but I want the excitement. There's no excitement there. There's just disaster waiting for you. Your life will be longer and better if you honor your parents. Okay, a couple of things. Listening to your mom and dad. I know I got to hurry because I got 3 others, which I'm not going to spend that long on. There are 3 things here that you're learning by listening to your mom and dad. First, it's the basis of society. It's the basis of structure. If you learn to obey your parents, to actually hear what they're saying and to follow it and to listen through it, that model becomes the basis for all of society. From there it goes, every door is open to you when you learn to listen and obey your mother and dad. When you don't learn that, the society closes its doors. It doesn't want to help you. It's built into the framework of our society. You don't think that, but that's really true. So we have all these programs to help wayward kids. Why do we have to have programs? Why do we have to fund it with your taxes? Because society's bias is against those who are not honoring their parents. Fundamentally, our world is, well, if your family isn't going to help you, I'm not going to help you. They know you better than anybody. So fundamentally, our society is opposed to those who do not listen to their fathers and father and mother. Structural, societal structure. Educational foundation. You aren't going to learn anything if you don't know how to go to school and sit in a desk and listen to your teacher. Most of what I do in school with children whom we call difficult or problem kids is to teach them stuff they should have learned from their parents. If you don't listen to your teacher, I am going to paddle you. She always gives you a warning, but the kid doesn't ever listen. This has become increasingly difficult to teach children because our society has moved away from parental authority. And if you're going to learn anything in school, you have to have the discipline to pay attention to your teacher. It's your educational foundation. The other thing is, it's your economic starting point. Honoring your father and mother, obeying your parents, obeying your father, that is the beginning of your money right there. You wouldn't believe how many people lose jobs because they never learned to listen to their parents. Your parents tell you things. And if you don't listen to them, you take that model straight out into the workplace and you get fired right off the bat. Why? Well, because nobody else has to put up with you. If you can't hear what the job description is and follow through with it, you're unemployed. So it's your economic starting place. But if you have a kid, if I have a kid that I hire, I expect them to work at a child's level. But for them to be able to take a task and fulfill it means that they heard me and they followed through and they did it. That child will go places. So I'm done. Children, obey your parents. Listen to them and honor them. You won't be sorry, ever. Fathers, stop provoking your children. All right, let me spend some time on this. Provoking is a really interesting term that he uses. I've always wondered why he didn't have fathers and mothers stop provoking. Well, that's because of the very nature of the word provoke. Mothers, by definition, cannot provoke their children. Okay, let me say that again. Mothers cannot, in the biblical model, and there's all kinds of models, so just bear with me. You have a biblical model, and then you have variations of it. But mothers cannot provoke their children. Why not? Because who is responsible for the operation of the household? The fathers are. So the father is the one who presides over the whole program. So if there's a problem with the mother, whose problem is it? The father. So by definition, he doesn't have to deal with mothers on provoking children. Because mothers, by definition, cannot provoke. It's a very specific term that he uses here. And it's used virtually, almost exclusively, of Israel and people provoking their God. So, for instance, like in Judges 2, Israel goes and makes their idols and they engage in all kinds of gross immoral behavior and they refuse to follow the Mosaic law. That's the context of Judges chapter 2. And they provoked the Lord their God. That's how this term is used. So this is a technical term of actions that are born out of rejection. Israel, and it's very interesting that he flipped the tables here on the use of this. Fathers, don't provoke your children to wrath. It's a flipping of the model because Israel is the one who's provoking God. So we would think children are not to provoke their fathers. But that's not how this works. He reverses it, and fathers are not to provoke their children. Why? Well, it's because of the term that he uses. Fathers are not to act based on a rejection of the child. What that looks like in parenting is that the father, and this is a natural action for men. It's a natural action to reject your children. Okay? That's where go see your mother comes from. How many of you fathers have used the phrase, go see your mother? This is your mother's problem. Don't talk to me. Go see your mother. So when you say to your child, go see your mother, that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. And so it's a natural behavior, and he says, stop it. Don't do that. The problem here is that the father essentially says, don't talk to me. And the difficulty in the situation is that the problem can never be resolved without the father's interaction. Why? Because he's presiding over the family system. So fathers, stop irritating, building resentment towards in your children. Stop provoking your children. He wants us to stop pushing them out and away from us. And again, you can draw the parallels between how Israel rejected God. Their actions were born out of a fundamental rejection. He says, don't do that. Don't push your kids away. As tempting as that is, as much work as you've got, as frustrating as your life is, of all the other problems you've got to remember that God puts you in your home to preside over it so that what takes place is nourishing. It's a long-term, slow process of bringing to maturity. But nourish them with instruction and encouragement. It's hard to translate this last term, the encouragement of the Lord, the correction of the Lord. It's words that lead to corrective behavior. When I first started studying psychology, there was a guy by the name of Jay Adams, and probably Michael's the only one that remembers the name, but he was the popular Christian psychiatrist or psychologist, Christian counselor, and he had this process called nouthetic counseling, which is based off of this word. And his idea was that you drill this into the brain of the kid, and then it sets the kid up for life, and they can't wander from what you put in their brain. I'm oversimplifying it, but it's ridiculous. Raising children is very complicated, and it's more than just sticking stuff in their brain. This is the management of the child in such a way that the child is wanting to move towards the Lord. It's the encouragement, reproof, the encouragement of the Lord. So what that looks like varies from child to child. There are some kids who are just so hard-headed, you have to use a tremendous amount of force just to get them to hear you. And there are other kids, all you have to do is look at them and immediately they respond. Every kid is different. That's why God gave fathers. But your thinking here is not rejection, go see your mother, but come here, let me talk to you about the Lord. Let me bring you up this nourishing, this long-term coaching to maturity through instruction, using words, and encouragement that the Lord gives you as you go through the process. These problems can never be solved without the father and mother working together, but the responsibility for the direction and the oversight belongs rightfully with the father. Slaves. Obviously, I'm going to spend less time on slaves. When you're dealing with this section, you might expect me to spend a long time talking about the ills and illnesses of slavery. I don't think that's what Paul has in mind. If it's possible to be free, obviously that's preferable. But when he comes down at the end of verse 8, he includes this little phrase, or a free person. So he's not just talking to slaves, he's talking to slaves and free people, because virtually all of us find ourselves in relationships, either by our choosing or against our choosing, with people that we have to obey. Now, today we have the option of changing jobs a lot of times, but then a lot of times you don't. You're stuck in life and you can't make changes. So here we are, slaves, obey the lords, that is, the one who are according to the flesh, your earthly lord, your earthly master. So the obedience here is exactly the same as listed with the children. So listen to what they have to say and see yourself as under their authority. With fear and with timidity, trembling, and pure motives, no double motives, pure motive of your heart, the purity of your heart, as to the Lord, as to the Messiah, literally the Christ, as to the Christ. So when he talks about slaves and free people, he says in your work relationships, you obey them, you obey your masters, and you ought to have a good dose of fear and trembling. Why? Well, they can cause a lot of problems for you, and it doesn't follow straight across because we don't do slavery today. Worldwide, slavery will come back in the future. We know that from Scripture. But at this point, he wants to make sure that we're not double-hearted and that we're doing it as unto the Lord. Verse 6, not according to eye service. That means you look around, nobody watching, you look on your phone. As people pleasers. Oh, boss is watching, now I better get to work. But as slaves of the Messiah, doing what God wishes out of heart, out of soul. So you work for the Lord. Here's his point. No matter who you work for, slave or free, you work as unto the Lord. Self-starter, pure motive, doing what God wants, God's wishes. Verse 7, with serving with good-heartedness, with benevolence, goodwill. So how do you do this as unto the Lord? Well, with a good heart, as to the Lord and not to people. Why do we do this? Knowing that whatever good each one should do, this he will receive for himself from the Lord, whether a slave or a free person. If you can solve this issue, children, obey your parents in the Lord. Why do you obey your parents? Because they're wonderful parents? No. You obey them because that is your biblical duty as to the Lord. What kind of a boss do you have? Is he an idiot? Well, he might be. But you serve him with a pure heart and good motives as unto the Lord. You do that, and what God will do is reward you, and you'll receive whatever good you do in this context because of your relationship to Christ. You will receive personally for yourself from the Lord. Learn about employment. You work for the Lord, but you have a boss. Everybody does. Well, I own my own business. Yeah, you think you do. The IRS tells you all kinds of things you have to do. The laws of Texas tells you all kinds of things. And besides that, you have customers. You have somebody that's paying, even if you have the freedom to make your own decisions as to whether you want to work from 10 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night or 6 o'clock in the morning to 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You have those choices. And then lastly, he refers to masters. These would be the bosses. And the lords do the same. The same refers to the good. All employees doing good will be rewarded by the Lord. All masters, all employers doing good will be rewarded by the Lord. So verse 9, the Lord's the same due to them. Giving up, threatening. Cool term. In Acts chapter 27, they give up their anchor. It's only used a couple of places in Scripture. So Paul is looking for just the right word. He assumes that all of us want to threaten. But letting go of the anchor on that ship that they were driven by the wind, they let go of the anchors, and you can see the chain as they let it loose, that thing's going across the deck, you know, and over the edge, the end comes and down it goes. Where's the anchor? It's gone. I watched on Facebook a video of an anchor on a big ship that malfunctioned, and the lift, the hoist that manages this chain started malfunctioning, and all of a sudden it starts smoking, and this thing stood as high as the wall. all the sailors, man, they backed away from that thing, and the whole boat was shaking from this malfunction. And finally it got to the end of the chain, and this thing just exploded. It was going so fast, there's no way the clutch burned out on it, I'm sure. But that thing just whipped over the edge, took the side of the boat out, and down into the deeps. It's gone. That's what you do with threatening. So who are you responsible for? You know, does it work to threaten your children? No. Solomon says it's unproductive, it's vain to correct your servant with words. It's the threatening doesn't work. You ever see a boss scream at an employee? How many have seen that? Scream at somebody? What an idiot. What an idiot. Does screaming at your children work? I can tell you from years' experience, kids in the school that get screamed at do not do well. So Paul says, give up the threatening. Stop it. Knowing that also your own master, your own Lord, is in heaven. And there's no partiality. There's no favoritism with him. It's impartial. Treating one person the same as the next. And so a good master, a good boss, is somebody who doesn't threaten and who's impartial. And through the years, as an employer, I've tried to make sure that I follow these two biblical injunctions. Who is a good boss? It's somebody who's fair. They're impartial. Everybody in this class receives the same care, the same treatment. Bonuses, part-time people, this, full-time people, this. Being impartial. And not threatening. What do you do when you have problems? Well, it's not threatening when you say, if this happens again, you'll have to find a different place to work. That's not threatening. Threatening is the screaming and yelling. It doesn't say you can't manage. It says stop threatening. Let it go. Be done with it. My son Ben is a assistant VP with the bank. And he always has at least one person in his group that he's in the process of making them leave the company because they refuse to follow the rules. They refuse to be there on time. They refuse to do their work and so forth. And so when I talk with him, it's always interesting. Well, Ben, what are you doing now? And we'll talk about the different challenges that he faces as a manager. But he never threatens. If you've done this, this is the consequence. That's a good boss. I'm being impartial. So the rest of the household, why do we include slaves and masters in the household? Well, properly, in the New Testament, every household would be made up of a father, a mother, children, and servants. Okay? And the father or the mother would also then double as the master. Although sometimes in large households, they would have a master who ran the household and ran the servants. So it depends on the size. But when Paul deals with household issues, we've dealt with all of them now. And Ephesians has some well-defined roles. Children, honor. Wives, submit. Husbands, love. Servants, do good as unto the Lord. Masters, bear in mind, you've got a master and his name's God. Father, thank you for this passage.